Hey everyone, Hoff here. Before we get started, we just want to send out a big thank you to our partner, Grind Coffee Co. for their support of the show. They're a convenient subscription service offering specialty grade, single source, 100% Arabica coffee available in whole bean and drip grind. Check out grindcoffeeco.com. Thanks again to Grind Coffee Co. for supporting the show.
This is Derek from Alden, and you are listening to the Builder Sessions. Thank you.
Welcome to the Builder Sessions, a podcast where we chat with your favorite builders. We get to know them, their stories, and hopefully inspire you to get off the couch and build something cool. We are Hoff and Rosie, and on this episode, we have Derek from Malden. We talk about his incredible journey to becoming who he is today, the importance of not compromising your integrity in your dealings with others, and how makers have to be adaptable and learn how to roll with the punches. All this and more on this episode of the Builder Sessions. Derek, welcome to the Builder Sessions.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This has been a long time coming. We've been trying to juggle we've had to flake on you a few times and then, with stuff going on with school and stuff. So thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today. I say this a few times, for anyone who has been living under a rock for the last few years, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So my name's Derek. I post as Derek from Malden on Instagram and a little bit on YouTube, and it goes over to Facebook. I don't really post there, but a lot of older people try to message me through Facebook thinking I'm posting there, but it's just my Instagram stuff goes over there. But the Derek from Malden thing, it's funny. A lot of people don't even understand what that means. Obviously, my name's Derek, and the from Malden, I'm from Malden, Mass. That's the town I live in. It's just north of Boston. It's about 10 minutes north of Boston. And I kind of got that name because Jimmy DiResta had another friend named Derek. And he used to refer to me as Derek from Alden. And I needed to just get a name for Instagram. So we said, okay, it'll be Derek from Alden. That's how I was referred to. So it kind of stuck. And my logo, it's a little bit fun, is a follower of mine. He was laid up from an injury. He was a police officer, actually. And that is a sign that you see every town when you go in Massachusetts from one town to another. That white sign with the black lettering is what tells you you're going from town to town. So Malden, Mass has one. So that's like the sign for my town. So with my info. So that's me.
I love that.
That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. I liked it when he did it, and it kind of stuck, and it fits well, and it's kind of cool. So I like it.
So what kind of stuff do you do for our guests that don't know?
You seem to dabble
with everything, Derek. So, I'm excited to hear this.
So basically, a lot of people don't realize this. I have a full-time job. I wouldn't say 9 to 5. I work 6 to 4. I work 4 days a week, 4 10-hour days. I work for a utility company. I don't say the name of the company. You can pretty much figure it out. For people who are younger, don't realize they used to be telephone. So we used to call it the telephone company, but it's not the telephone company anymore. It's more of a communication company, but I've been there 35 years. I took it as a temporary job out of high school, and it's been a great job because it pays the bills and, you know, it's got great benefits. But, growing up as a city kid, it was funny. You always were pushed back then, not everybody went to college, and you were pushed to either get a job, you know, with a utility company because it always was decent pay, decent benefits, you got a pension. And that was what I was kind of always told to do. And I always wanted to be a carpenter and or an architect. And when I graduated high school, the economy was horrible. And I had been working with the gentleman for a number of years because I'll talk about it later, but I started working with this guy when I was about 12 or 13 years old, cleaning up job sites. And I just wanted to be a carpenter, but the economy was horrible. There was no construction going on. I took a job here for a year, and here, 35 years later, I'm still here. Started posting on Instagram after hanging out with Jimmy DiResta for a while. He told me I should share what I was doing online. And then we were going to do this little show called Making Fun on Netflix, and I was having a hard time talking in front of a camera. So they suggested I started doing stories. And that's how the whole thing with the story started. And I loved like the response I was getting from people that were following me. So I've just always kept doing them, you know, and it's one of my favorite things to do. I have a great little following of very faithful followers, and it's a lot of fun.
Wow. So lots of times it's interesting to see these people on social media like yourself and all these makers and builders. And I always want that first question is, are they doing this, you know, as a full-time job? Do they already have a, so for you to be working, you know, 40 hours a week and be able to pump out all this stuff on the side on your weekends, that you've got to be pretty well it's organized.
No, totally disorganized. It's just like controlled chaos. It's funny. I have a great wife and she's very supportive, and my kids are all grown. My youngest is 21. My oldest is 32. And, so there's not a lot of stuff going on at home for taking care of kids and that type of stuff. I go to work early. I work 4 days a week. I work 6 to 4. And, so I'm home and in my shop by 4:30 usually. And I'll be there till, you know, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night, sometimes 11, 12 o'clock. I try to finish about 10, 10:30 usually, because I get up at 4 a.m. and it gets a little tough to get up early. But I have Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Like today, I got home. I was, you know, home 15 minutes and I was in the shop, and I'll probably be down here till probably 9 or 10 o'clock tonight, you know. So every free minute is in the shop. So it's a lot, but
how do you like that 4 day work week?
I love it. It's funny. We technically we have a 5 day work week, so they kind of do it as a favor to us. So it could end at any time, but we've been doing it for years and it's great. And on a holiday week, we go back to a 5 day work week, and where I start so early in the morning, it's kind of fun. It's like working a half day, 'cause then I get out at 2. So it's like, you know, by the time you eat lunch, it's time to go home pretty much. So it's kind of nice that way after working 10-hour days, because it is long days. But it is nice having that three-day weekend. You know, it's I like it. I wouldn't change it if I would love to keep it for the rest of my career, because it's just it's nice having that extra day off, you know.
And in your case, to be able to work on more projects at home and in the shop.
Yeah. Because you can kind of just stay really more focused. It's hard starting late in the day, you know, especially after working all day. In the winter, it's hot all the time. It's hot in the winter because it's cold out. I work outside, so I'm out in the cold all day. But I'm thinking it's hot in the summertime as well when you're out in the heat all day and you want to get motivated. But it's hard, you know. Right now I'm struggling with a project I'm working on. And I did a podcast last night. I do one with Jimmy DiResta with we just share it with our patrons. But it's a sign that I'm doing, and I'm getting paid well for it. And it's hard when you start doing projects that, you know, that they're not for family and friends anymore, and it's for a company and it's thousands of dollars and it's not perfect. And you know, obviously being handmade, it's not going to be perfect, but you want it as close to perfect without, maybe put it a better way, the least amount of imperfections. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you want to make a quality thing, because it's going to be up on their wall for their customers to see every day. And your name's going to be beside it. And, you know, so you want to make sure it looks good. So it's just a lot of stress. And this particular sign, it was supposed to be done December 1st. It's for a medical treatment place, and they're not going to be opening for another couple of weeks. So I've been able to push it back, which has been nice, but it's just a lot of stress. You know, it's just, it's been wearing on me, and it's just kind of, you know, I want it done. So
How do you manage stress with your day-to-day functions with, you know, when you started, I'm assuming there was probably a lot of stuff for family, friends. Now you're getting clients, yeah. I guess. How do you manage all that?
Honestly, my biggest stress reliever is just being in the shop. You know, that's kind of why I think I bury myself in my shop. I've had, you know, a lot of issues over the years, and it's for my own mental health, being in my shop and work, and has been very therapeutic for me. And I think my wife realizes that. And so she doesn't, you know, worry too much about it. Like, she lets me kind of do my thing, because it just kind of keeps me sane and keeps me like focused and centered. But it's, you know, being in my shop, it's just like, I really don't care what's going on in the world as long as I'm in my shop. And it, sometimes it's not a great way to be, but I don't know. It keeps me sane.
I think there's a lot of people that can relate to that. I'm definitely one of those. Yeah. If I'm going down a rabbit hole, or, you know, it's just, there's too much. If I can, and yeah. Now I don't have a shop at home. So being high school teachers, just being in that atmosphere, being able to work on something little, put my music yeah. on and just let those machines go. It just almost, it brings everything down almost to a consistent level, manageable, I guess. Right. Gets rid of all that day-to-day crap. So
after talking to a lot of people in the maker community, you find out there's a lot of people that have, I don't want to say substance abuse issues, but maybe substance abuse issues in their past, drinking issues, mental health issues. And I think a lot of people, that's why they are so into their craft. You know, I think it's, you know, when you go down that road of recovery and learning about it, you learn, you know, the drinking, the drugs, the gambling, all that's just a symptom of an underlying issue you had. And, you know, it's you're doing something to your body to keep you out of, you know, what it is you were thinking about, you know. And I think with woodworking or metalworking or just making in general, it's a similar type thing. You know, it kind of brings you to a different place mentally, and that's how people cope. And that's kind of been my thing for the last 20 something years, you know.
Is there a specific machine that when you're, you know, in a bad place, or, you know, you just need to kind of get out of that anxious, is there a certain machine, or is it just your whole shop?
My whole shop, but I really enjoy one of my machines. I really enjoy using, I have a CNC that I use a lot, but I really enjoy my laser. My CO2 laser, I have a fiber laser and a CO2 laser. I enjoy the CO2 laser. I love the instant gratification of being able to like create a file and cut something. And, you know, with the CNC, it's a pain in the neck, you know, trying to figure out a feed, a speed, breaking a bit, you know, resetting it. With the laser, it's, you know, you just, you know, slow it down a little bit more, and, you know, you can cut something, you know, it's not as painful of a learning curve, like for a file to, you know, get something to cut. So I enjoy that. When I want to relax, I really enjoy TIG welding. You know, sometimes I'll just TIG weld scraps of steel together just because I kind of enjoy the focus it takes to do it, you know, and just kind of the rhythm with it. It just kind of, you know, it's almost like meditation, I would think. I don't meditate, but I would imagine that's what it would be like.
It's so relaxing.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe not aluminum so much.
Yeah.
With the AC. But when you're doing steel, it's just quiet and it's.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can totally relate.
So the aluminum, I still struggle with it. I shouldn't say I don't struggle with it, because I just did an aluminum bracket for a sign I made, and I struggled with that. It was thick aluminum. And I think it was like the limit of my machine, but I used to struggle with aluminum. And I used to think there was no way I could weld aluminum. And then I'm blessed to be sponsored by Lincoln Electric. And this past summer, they let me go out to their school for a week, and we learned TIG welding, and we focus mostly on aluminum TIG welding. And a friend of mine that I've made online, he's a very prominent TIG welder, and he helped me out a lot too. And once kind of somebody gives you the secrets to what you need, it's kind of really easier than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, but you really need to know what you're doing to set it up right. It's like, you can't fake it. You know, the other, like, you know, TIG welding steel, you can kind of fake it, but aluminum. There's no fake in it.
You can tell where you breathe, where you took a breath. Yeah. You could tell. Yeah. Yeah, and even like exactly. The buzz, the different, frequent. Uh-huh. It's cool though.
Yeah.
So let's take a step back.
Yeah.
Let's go back. How did it all start? Were you like a, when you were a little kid, were you building with some Lego or a Meccano set or like, was your dad into building stuff?
No. My father, it was funny. My father, he was a first generation immigrant from Sicily.
Oh,
and
cool.
He would fix anything out of necessity just because we were poor. He could, fix our exhaust on our car. Like if it fell off, he could, refix, do the engine, always fixing the car. And just that's always the way it was growing up, And, but he wasn't like, building cabinets or furniture or nothing like that. No interest in it. No desire. I don't even know if he knew how to do it. My father died very young. So I don't know if that was his choice or what it was. But I never remember my father doing anything like that. It was always stuff out of necessity, always fixing the toilet, the sink if it was leaking, that type stuff. And growing up, I always wanted to play ice hockey. And so I started playing. And anybody who plays ice hockey knows it's a very expensive sport to play. And he basically, when I was about 12 years old, after about 3 years, he says, if you can't afford it, you want to play, you're going to have to start working. And it's funny hearing that now, you'd be arrested for child abuse nowadays, He knew somebody that did like construction type work. And he said, you're going to have to go work with this guy. And I started working with this guy and cleaning up construction sites, picking up trash, that type of stuff, nothing crazy. And then he'd have me doing a little bit of paint. And I loved it. I was there. I'd be there every weekend. I'd be there after school breaks, everything. And this guy kind of just took a liking to me and really just kind of really pushed me. And when I was about 16 years old, we had built a couple houses. Well, we built a house. We built like a huge addition, basically a house. And it was funny. I was like, this is it. I'm going to be a carpenter. It was like, we're partners, And the summer was winding down. And it was my senior year in high school. And he said, I got great news. I said, what's that? He said, I got a job as a school teacher. It's like, well, how are you going to be a carpenter and a school teacher? He's like, I'm not. I'm done. I never wanted to be a carpenter.
No way.
I'm like, Well, what about me? He's like, you have to get a job. I don't know. He's like, you'll figure it out, And I was devastated. And I tried working with other people. He was really like loosey-goosey, like just do whatever I kind of wanted type thing. And I couldn't really get it going with any type of company. Like I wasn't used to like the structured thing. It's not how he operated. And after about a year, my brother's was working at this company I currently work for. And he says, why don't you come here for a year and just figure it out, And so I did. And I liked a steady paycheck. It was nice. And then I had a child shortly after, not planned. And I needed a steady job to pay for this child. And it was a blessing in disguise because, like I said, 35 years later, I'm still at the same place. But all those years, I was never really fulfilled. Mm-hmm. So it's funny, the gentleman I worked for, I'm still friends with him. He's retired. He became a vice principal of the school system. And we laugh about it today, But the house we built, he ended up keeping and he lives in it. It's a part-time vacation property. But he, he just always wanted to be a teacher, that was his thing. And so probably like 15 years after started working, I started my own little construction company and I was pretty successful, but it was, I never had the confidence to just kind of leave, and then you get so far along into a career, it's kind of like, I need to stay, And I kind of got to that point. And but I was doing a lot of like I did a lot of like doors, windows, decks, stuff like that that I could do while still having a full-time job. You know, people don't want you. You know, I would do bathrooms if it was a second bathroom for somebody or something like that. But I just it started as I got older, started to get real heavy, all the stuff, you know, like building decks. And that's when I kind of started to transition more into smaller stuff. I always was like a tinkerer. I'd always take everything apart. I was always curious about how things work. I still have books that my mother gave me. I remember for Christmas that she would write the dates inside from like I was born in 1969, and these are from like 74, 75, like how this works is like the title of one of them. So, you know, I was probably 5, 6, 7 years old. I was always interested in how things always worked. So and to this day I am, you know, I just always was an inquisitive kid, you know. So I was always doing stuff like that, taking things apart. And I thought that's what everybody did. You know, I never realized that. Like I never brought my car to get fixed. You know, I always did it myself. And, you know, but I guess not everybody does do all that stuff, you know. It's just odd to me. And it's even more rare nowadays, you know.
It's interesting that you talk about how your dad fixed everything out of necessity, but then you picked that up and fixed everything by the sounds of it out of some sort of curiosity or a passion. And it's cool how you pick that up and then you kind of turn that into your own passion. Is that kind of like on purpose to maybe honor your dad or just subconsciously maybe? It's kind of interesting.
Probably subconsciously. You know, it's funny. My truck is a couple years old now, but at the time it was like first brand new car I had ever owned. And I was like, I'm never gonna fix this car. You know, I'm gonna bring it to the place, have it fixed. And when the brakes just went, I'm like, I gotta do it myself. I can't pay somebody to do it. You know, it's just like out of principle, it was just
Get
I
that.
couldn't do it. But it's funny, I just, you know, I have four children. I have three girls and a boy, and my son's the youngest. And I kind of was always my dream was I was gonna like build this like making, fixing, working on things empire and pass it on to him and just hand him like the keys to the kingdom and he'd have a nice, easy life and enjoy it. And when he just had zero interest in anything I do, it was devastating, to be honest with you. I had a very hard time accepting it. You know, but through just being like, you know, realizing I was probably never interested in what my father was interested in, I kind of had to just let him go, you know, find his passion and what he wants to do. You know, he's into business and he's actually in business school now. And I think it's just totally boring. And I'll leave it at that. But, you know, if he likes it, it's his life and he'll have to live it. And maybe he'll figure out he doesn't like it. I don't know. But I can't make that decision for him, unfortunately, you know.
How do your kids feel that now that they have an influencer for a dad?
They love it. They're good. They give me a hard time about it. We have a lot of fun with it.
That's
It's
cool.
you know, being Derek from Malden, the town I live in, you know, like a little bit of a local celebrity. And it's, you know, just nice when we go out and people recognize me from like the TV show and stuff. It's always exciting, you know. And you know, last year me and Jimmy and my wife were going to Atlanta, and you know, she was, you know, the show, maybe it was 2 years ago now that I think of it, the show, you know, had just come out. And you know, she had never, you know, been with me when people would recognize us, and we were going through security at the airport. And somebody's like, oh my God, it's the guys from Making Fun. And, you know, there's people asking and, you know, wanting to take pictures with us. And she was just really floored. And it's a lot of fun. You know, it's, you know, like all my kids' friends think I'm like the coolest father around. And, you know, they just want to, you know, ask me questions about things all the time. So it's a lot of fun. You know, it could be worse.
So you talked a lot about the carpentry background.
Yeah.
You do a lot of, you were talking about welding,
Yeah.
CNC, epoxy work. How did you pick up or learn all those skill sets? Was it a matter of trial and error, or did you have some mentors, or did you just be like, I want to try it out?
Yeah, just basically I want to try it out. I just kind of, you know, it's funny. You know, Jimmy's always been a really big inspiration of mine. And, you know, I remember somebody had sent him a 3D printer, and I was at his house, and He's like, this thing's stupid. I'll never use it. I have no use for it. I don't know how to use it. And I think you find out that, you know, a lot of times people talk like that because maybe they don't know how to use it and they're a little bit embarrassed or something like that. So instead of, you know, reaching out and saying, hey, I don't know how to use this, you know, they just say, it's stupid. I don't want to use it. And then, you know, he took some time and learned how to use it. And, you know, I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. Like he figured that out, you know, and I'll never forget. I was like, I would never know how to use a CNC machine. I could never figure it out. And I was over in England at Maker Central, and one of the guys that worked for Vetric, he's like, if you can get a CNC, we'll give you the software. And I was like, oh. So just flying home, I was like, that was nice of him, but I was like, I'd never get a CNC from anywhere. And that weekend, Jimmy gave me Inventable. And I say now Inventable had sent him a brand new CNC, and he gave it to me. He just, you know, never used. And he's like, hey, go use it, you know? And I started using it, and I liked it. It was fun. It was very it was, looking back, it was very easy to use because their software was very, you know, simple to use. But, you know, as you know, at the time, I was probably, you know, 47, 48 years old and not very computer literate. It was pretty difficult, but I kind of got through it. You know, I could make it do a circle, and that was cool and stuff. And then a guy I worked with was like, oh, you got a CNC thing? He's like, I need you to make me a sign with a name, and I want it shaped like a little leaf, you know? And I was like, oh, okay, I think I can do that. So I did it. And he's like, oh, I need 85 of them with different names. And I'm like, oh, man. Yeah. And it was the first job that I really did, like, in my shop that somebody paid me for. And, you know, I charged him, I think it was like $30 for the first one. So it was whatever, you know, 30 times 18 is. And, you know, he'd given me a bunch of, you know, names. He just kept going and going. And it was just like, it was just funny because he kept adding names. I think it was like 20 at first, but it ended up being like 80 names at one time. It was like everybody's like extended family. And it was really cool. And I was just like, wow, maybe I could do this, you know? And, you know, then when the laser came, it was like, you know, I don't know if I could do a laser, but then somebody's like, oh, it's just kind of like a CNC, but different. And I was like, oh, I'll try it, you know? But I've always been like interested. Like I've always wanted to learn how stuff worked, you know? And that's what, like, I tell people, they're like, oh, you should make like cutting boards and do this. And there's nothing against anybody making cutting boards, but like, I just don't want to do that. Like that just doesn't really interest me. Like, I mean, I'd love to be able to retire from my job and just, you know, have steady income making cutting boards and stuff. But I just, like, that would just be horrible, like, to do. I just like doing different things, you know?
Do you think do you think that opens up your, opens up the creativity part of your skill sets where you can maybe catch on to, say, for example, Vectric software when you're kind of keen into it and want to try and do something out of the box that you retain that information a bit better?
Yeah. And it's funny because, like, I had done the sign for this woman for a florist just recently, and I had to make the bracket for it. I made it out of aluminum just because I didn't want to paint it. It was going by the ocean. And so it was like, you know, I was thinking about that. It's like, you know, I laser cut the sign, and then like the trim for the wood was all, you know, I had to, you know, make all, you know, do all the lumber, and, you know, and then I had to weld the sign and all that stuff, the bracket for it. And, you know, it's funny because then somebody just reached out to me for a sign for a car. It's a Cadillac Escalade. It's like an anniversary edition, and they wanted to look like the emblem off the car was like taken off the car. And I really don't know how to like do 3D modeling, not modeling, but like programming Vectric for 3D cars and stuff. And that just kind of drives me crazy because I don't have the time to take to really learn it. Like, I know how to do basic stuff, but not something like that. And I just get aggravated because, like, I keep pushing this project off, and instead of just being like, oh yeah, like I can do that. And, you know, it just, I just wish I could force myself to take more time to learn certain things like that. But it is nice to, you know, like take on stuff to try to learn, you know, okay, now I know how to use Vectric. I need to know how to, you know, do 3D carves with it, you know, but it's a lot sometimes.
we use Vectric at the school, and I've had a CNC, I think we're on year two, maybe two and a half, and I had a little bit of experience with VCarve at the school that I did my practicum in. So I had the kind of, like you were saying, the basic shapes, bringing a logo in, doing some VCarve work, but that whole 3D side with Aspire, just again, same thing. You have to have the time to be able to put into it. I want to learn how to do it, but I don't have, like, I feel like you'd almost need to be, you know, 40 hours a week to get the basics of the 3D side of it.
Yeah. And what's kind of been a bummer for me, so Vectric's been really good to me, supporting me. And one of the gentlemen that worked there, he would like do a Zoom call and like tutor me. And I was learning a lot. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's how you do this, how you do this. But then, like, I'll try it and I'm like, I remember, but it's like, okay, this button's ghosted out. Like, it won't do what I need it to do. So, like, I gotta, like, select something else, and I don't know what that next thing is. And that gets frustrating. And I'm just like, ah, screw it, you know? But I really do need to figure that out, you know?
And the Zoom call was 4 months ago, so I don't remember what we talked about
anyway. exactly, yeah, you know? And it's not, you know, I always try to write things down, or like I like write them on the computer so I can like remember certain things and stuff. But it's hard because it's like a lot of it too, it's like words that you don't, not words you don't normally use, but just like, it's not like regular, you know, expressions like that make sense, you know, like you know, bring in these components and then you bake them to do a certain thing, and it's like, okay, well, what does baking actually do? Like, I forget, I remember how to do it, you know what I mean? Like,
what the hell's like nesting that. And
exactly, you know. So it's like, so it's not as intuitive as I was hoping it would be, you know. So
I feel like you have to really put the time in, even trying to teach. I'm to the point now where I'm able to teach a lot of the, at first it was just me running a lot because I was trying to learn first my machine, then the software, right? That's one thing. Then when you start loading work on and centering it and, you know, checking for feeds and speeds and.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. People think it's just real simple and it's really not, you know, there's a real lot to it. I mean, it's not, doesn't take a lot to make the machine move and then to make it cut something, but to have it do things right. And, you know, even I still struggle, like, you know, I'll cut out a sign and I'll be sanding it and there'll be like a lot of tool marks on it. And I know that there's ways that you can adjust this, so like those tool marks are almost non-existent, you know, but I don't want to say I can't figure it out, but so part of me doesn't want to take the time to figure it out. You know, I'm just like, oh, I'll just sand them off, you know, but there are people who really get it done right. So they're like, you know, very minimal sanding and, you know, that type stuff. But, you know, for me, sometimes it's just not worth it, you know, to get into that deep into the weeds with stuff, you know.
I can relate to that. I run a makerspace class as well. And so... We have a whole bunch of stuff. I have sewing machines in there. I have like three 3D printers. We have our plasma table, a bunch of different things, different media to use. And one of my colleagues, he's huge into 3D printer, the 3D printing. Uh-huh. He's got he just bought a bamboo machine where you can do like four colors and like it's you can't see any line, like it's crazy.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, you should learn how to do this and this. He's like, see what happened right there. It's too close, so I usually make my first layer like 1.5 mils. So then he's going on and on, but that's his thing, right? He's like mistress. He's got like a print farm at his house. Yeah. Like that's his thing. But this is cool that you brought this up because it leads perfectly into my next question about being a jack of all trades, right? Uh-huh. So those people who know all the jargon and the nomenclature, the nesting and all that stuff, that's their thing. Your thing is a lot of things.
Yeah.
Right. And so, first part of the question, was that all self-taught or did you go to any post-secondary or anything? Okay.
No.
That's what I thought you were going to say. So then is there ever any imposter syndrome? Like, do you ever think, oh, I should go back, I should have got my this, or I wish I had my welding ticket, or I wish I had this piece of paper?
It's funny, yes and no, because, like, up until, like, I'm not the brightest guy you'll ever meet, but, like, up until, like, a year ago, I never even knew that was, like, a thing that people ever felt like that. Like, I was just, like, you know, people just, like, do their thing, and that's it, you know? And it's funny, because I just had to build a bunch of boxes for Carhartt and the clothing company. And I didn't show too much of it online. It was kind of weird where they were like, you can show it, but this and that. And it just, I was like, it'd just be easy not to talk about it. But, you know, I wanted these things. They paid a lot of money for them. I wanted them to be really nice. And it's funny, they didn't come out as nice as I want, not because the workmanship, but because the way they were designed. They're not going to know this, but like Carhartt basically was like, oh, their legal team came out like, oh, we don't want the logo on it. We don't want this. We don't want that. We don't want that. And I'm like, so I'm making like a wooden box. Like there's no Carhartt branding on it. And, you know, it was like, I get it. It was liability reasons and it was, you know, copyright stuff, but it wasn't like it was a million boxes I was making. It was like a small number. But anyway, a friend of mine was helping me out. And he's a very accomplished, high-end woodworker. And I really felt, like, inadequate. You know, I never really thought about it. I knew he did a lot of stuff with hand tools. But, like, we go out there and we put stuff through the saw. And I'm like, do you have a sander? And he's like, yeah, I don't use that. And I was like, oh, it's got, like, saw marks on it. He's like, well, we'll just use a hand plane. I was like, oh, no, it's, like, on the face of it. He's like, oh, yeah, we'll just take that off with a hand plane, a smoothing plane. I'm like, I don't even know how to do that, you know? And, you know, so he pulls out this $3,000 handmade smoothing plane. And he's like, yeah, use this. And I was just like, I don't know how to use it. You know?
I don't even know what this is.
And he helped me, yeah. And it was funny. It was so, like, a little bit embarrassing, but it was just so difficult. But he was great. He was just like, no, you got to do it this way and do this and do this. And it was funny, you know, we had made a box there and kind of figured it out, the dimensions and how we wanted it. And then I did them at home. And, you know, when I was at home, I got out my, you know, that's how, I don't know if you guys, you know, watch much of my Instagram, but I was just complaining about my Tormach sharpener because I needed to sharpen my planes. And they're actually sending me some stuff to tune it up a little bit. So that would be good. But I was like, I never in a million years would ever use planes to like clean up like saw marks and stuff. But after working with him, it really kind of, he showed me the correct way to do stuff. I'm like, now I'm going to. It's not as difficult as I want, as I thought it was. I have this. Let me grab this real quick. I didn't show this just because I didn't want people, like if somebody had a drinking issue or whatever, but yeah, it's grain alcohol, Everclear, but this is shellac. It's not even, you know, so he uses grain alcohol for his shellac because you can spray it like in the house, you know, it's not, I mean, obviously you don't want to inhale the vapors, but it's, you know, it's not like it's solvent based or whatever and going to be dangerous. I mean, it is flammable still, but it's just alcohol. It's not, you know, whatever. But so we did it. I was like, that's it? He's like, yeah. I was like, I've never used shellac ever. And he's like, oh, you're crazy, dude. So I started using it and I was like, wow, that's like, why don't people use it? And he's like, because people don't know how to use it and they're afraid to ask, you know? He's like, it's not a finish you want to use for a kitchen table, but, you know, like for small boxes and stuff like that, he goes, it's the way you do it. And like these had like really figured liners inside. They put like 8 coats of shellac on in a morning, you know, and it came out beautiful. And I sprayed it all. I was like, why didn't I ever do this before, you know? So I kind of wish I was trained in some things, like just like I was saying earlier, the TIG weld and aluminum, you know? And I couldn't do it. I couldn't even get it to melt. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong? You know? And then when somebody explains to you, you know, you have to have clean in action and you have to have this and you have to have this. And it's like, oh, that's how that works, you know? And sometimes I think you get to a point, where you're embarrassed to ask, or you're just maybe at my point, you're so old, you're just like, I don't give a shit anymore. Maybe, I don't know. You know, there was a lot of that that went on with the TV show. You know, they wanted like engineers to figure things out and this and that. And Jimmy was really stubborn. He obviously led the charge on, you know, most of the projects and that type stuff. And we did have a couple problems with things just because he's not an engineer. You know, he's a guy that just makes shit in his shop, you know, and when you need something to work a certain way, you have problems. And we had major problems. So it was, you know, edited brilliantly. But, you know, when we did like the rock, paper, scissors, you know, the whole thing was, it was a joke. I'm like, oh, let's just keep throwing rock, because that was the only one that worked, you know. And then that came, it became the storyline, you know, where they're just like, oh, Derek just throws rock all the time. And, you know, there's a part there when Jimmy's like, you know, just move the hand, and Graz screams back. He's like, it's too heavy to move the hand. Like, that wasn't like him acting that way. Like, he was like kind of getting pissed at him because the things weren't working, you know? And it just, you can't go back. Like, you know, when you shoot a show, it's like, okay, we start today, we end here. It's not like, okay, we'll figure it out tomorrow. It's like, no, it needs to be done today. Like, that's it, you know? And the same thing happened with the Nutcracker to make the arms chop. And at the end, it didn't work. And we finally got it to work so they could edit it. So it was fine, you know? And, you know, as far as the timeline things, at the end of each episode, we all stand there and we look at it. We're like, wow, that thing's really cool. I can't believe we made that. And in one episode, the thing isn't shown and you don't realize it, because it's amazing how your mind fills in the blanks. But on Soccer Shoe Car, you only see the top rim of the soccer shoe in that scene. It's just a 10-second scene or whatever it is. All of us are like, oh, that's really cool, that's really cool. But the car wasn't built. It was just, they took fabric, clipped it over the top of the edge of the thing. Most of the car was built, but it wasn't like it looked at in the show. And they just edited it, you know, from the top of the car to our faces, and that was it. But, you know, the next scene, the car's, you know, zooming across the field, you know, like, wow, that car, that's why they liked that car, you know? And, you know, you don't realize it. But, you know, when things have to be done, they have to be done. That was the point.
Do you ever find those types of shows, whether it's Making Fun or we've had some automotive people on, and shows like Overhauling, those types of shows that get things done really quickly in like seven days or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you ever find that people who inquire to you, or like people who pay you for building something for them, has that in our society, have those shows impacted their expectations of how quickly things get done?
Yeah, I think, you know, like, it, case in point, this kid, like, you know, a lot of it's my fault why it's not done. But, you know, like I told this kid, like, I have to let this paint dry for, you know, 24, 48 hours, like in between coats. Like, I can't speed that up. Like, that's what it takes, you know? And, you know, so if there's a setback, it's like a setback, you know, for, you know, four more days, you know, for two coats of paint, you know? And it's funny because it was, you know, you really realize that with, like, when you do the show, how things are perceived, you know, like everybody thinks everything does get built like that. You know, we were very lucky. We were able to build these things really quick and they came out pretty damn good, you know, but it's funny. People think everything's put together like that. And it's not, you know, it does take time, you know, to, you know, source materials, to, you know, mill materials up, to let them sit, to acclimate, you know, to you know, glue them, to, you know, sand them, to paint them, to finish them. You know, it just, everything takes time.
Well, I could buy it from IKEA tomorrow for cheaper. You get a lot of that.
But then it would take you 3 weeks to assemble it, and the time it takes somebody to make it.
That too. And a divorce.
That's
what
I, that's what it's always been tough. You know, in the beginning, my wife, like a lot of her friends, they'd send me like text messages, say, hey, I just seen this on Etsy, but I want to give you the business. And I'd be like, just tell them to go get it. Like, I'm not making it for them. And she'd be like, why are you doing that? And it's like, it's just, Like, you don't understand, they don't understand. Like, one, it's Etsy's not even Etsy anymore. Etsy's like stuff being made over in India, and you know, everything. There are people that still sell on Etsy, don't get me wrong, but a lot of the stuff on there, because I know a lot of people that do it themselves, they're not making it, and it's coming from other parts of the world, and that's why it takes, you know, 2 weeks to get it. And it's a shame, but that's just the reality of it, you know. So when there's a sign on there for $85 and the material's like $50, like I can't, you know, make
Can't
that,
touch it,
you know, for
yeah.
you, you know. And I appreciate you thinking of me. And you know, the tough part is my day job, I do pretty well at. So it's like I'm not gonna, you know, 10 hour day there's a nice easy day, you know. I'm not gonna work, you know, twice as hard in my shop for half the money. It's not, it's just business wise, it doesn't make sense to me, you know. So it is hard. You have to find people who get it and people who want to pay the money. And people, you know, I've been fortunate enough that to find people like that, not all the time, but that's okay. You know, it's not for everybody. You know, most people I talk to, I usually say, you know, you don't want to get this from me. You know, it just, and it kind of bums me out
Yeah,
because
for
I do
sure.
want to make stuff for people, but it's, it's expensive. Everything's expensive, you know, and it's like, you know, some people buy it because they want something made from Derek from Malden. Some people buy it because they value handmade stuff. And some people buy it because they just don't give a shit, you know, so it's, you know, it's good, you know, however the choice is, but
Sometimes I feel you almost need the buy-in from the clients about trusting the process of what it, you know, like you're
yeah,
saying, they don't know, they don't
absolutely.
understand the sourcing the materials, the milling, the gluing. Like there's all these little parts that unless you don't know how to do that, oh, this sign is 85 on Etsy. Well, it might be 500 for me. Oh, well, you know, there's some people that I maybe those that are involved in the trades. I can appreciate the time that you would be putting into your
Oh
signs,
yeah.
right? So,
Yeah.
yeah, I don't know. It's
It
hard to swing that sometimes because there's people very much, and I
yeah.
doing the cabinet making side and doing a little bit on the side before I got into teaching. It was, you know, sometimes I'd try and undervalue. My wife still tells me this, you undervalue yourself too much. You know, you need to charge
Yeah.
what you're worth. And there's some quotes going out there. There's a shirt I saw somebody said, what is it? I charge what I'm worth, not. Oh, what was it? I can't remember. It's kind of like all my experiences are getting to
Yeah.
me to this point. It's not just
Yeah.
a table,
Yeah. Yeah.
right?
You're paying for what I know, not for what I'm
There you
doing.
go.
And it see, and that's the problem. It's just like when you go to the dentist, you get a tooth pulled. You know, if it takes him 10 minutes, he doesn't charge you $25. You know, you're paying for all his dental school and stuff. And another thing people don't think about, and it's where it gets difficult, is like, you know, like these boxes I built, it wasn't Carhartt's fault, but you know, I had to drive to Connecticut to get some of the wood. Then I had to drive to New Hampshire to get the other part of the wood. Like it was like a 9 hour day, you know, like I hadn't even started building the boxes yet, you know, then everything's going to be milled up. And then, you know, like somebody's got to pay for that time, you know,
Because your time is
designing the
worth something.
box. Yeah, you know, getting the boxes to wrap them and, you know, then deliver them to the post office. Like all that takes time and it's embarrassing. I built a white oak table last year, was it? I can't remember. Maybe it was 2 years ago now. And I figured out all my hours, all my time, and it cost me $200 to make somebody a $6,000 table. I cost money out of my, you know, with my time and stuff, you know, and it was a tough pill to swallow. It was devastating, to be honest with you. But, you know, I told this person I'd make the table and I committed to it. And, you know, when I was halfway through it, a friend of mine that makes tables for a living, he's like, I hope you charged him like $10,000 for this table. I was like, no, I didn't. He's like, it's not enough money. And I was like, no, I'll be fine. I'll be fine. The wood was only $1,500. He's like, okay. And it was not enough money. I actually even had to rent a space to just put finish on it because it was too big for my shop. And it was devastating. And, you know, the customer offered me more money. I didn't take it foolishly just because I was like, the price is the price. And it was a lesson learned, you know. And it was funny because I got offered, somebody asked me to make him a table recently. And a good friend of mine said, you obviously forgot about the other table. And I said, you know what? You're right. and I'm not a table maker, you know. Yeah. It's just a lot, you know. And I don't think people realize that when they get a price or they hear a price, you know. I know somebody that's making a dresser for somebody and they're charging like $7,000, $8,000, and it seems like a ton of money, but when you start working day in and day out, and you know, even if you have a decent job or whatever, you know, especially, you know, I'm outside of Boston, you're gonna make decent money to live here. You know, I've been here 30 years in this house, but where I live, I couldn't afford to live where I live right now, you know. And you know, if you're not making a decent living, you're gonna be broke, you know. And it's like all that's gonna be accounted for, you know.
Lots of logistics too, you know, that you could have a glue up that potentially goes wrong, or you're applying finish and there's some dust that falls from the ceiling. Well, now that's setting you back because you've got to wait for that to dry, sand it. Like there's lots of those intricacies that you might not even think of, and the customer sure doesn't, that come up, and now you got to spend more hours working on a project because something happened.
We always joke around, say my signs cost three times as everybody else's because I do them three times, you know, and that's kind of like always the way. Like, and it's funny because I don't want to say I'm not a perfectionist, but I'm really a perfectionist to a fault. Like, I see a lot of signs people do and they'll like spray paint them and I'll like zoom in on them and they get like orange peel and, you know, they sell them like that. That's fine. And the people who buy them, it's fine. But like, I would never, ever, ever do that. Like, I would wet sand something and people are like, what? And I'm like, it has to be flat. Like, it has to look like it was made in the factory, you know? And like, that's not charming to me, you know? And when something looks, you know, half done.
Yeah.
You know,
I used to work in an auto parts store, and even people just haggling over prices nowadays too.
Yeah.
Like this one, I'll never forget this. This guy, he was about to retire, this old rancher. He had show horses, and he's just like leather skinned, stubborn, grumpy old bastard. And he was awesome. And so this guy comes in and he gets a price on I think it was like a cold air intake or something for his truck, and gives him the price. And he goes, well, I could drive to Calgary, which was about 3 hours away from where we were at. I could drive to Calgary and get it at this store for like $30 cheaper. And he goes, okay. So you go to Calgary, you get the part, you come back, and when you're back, I want you to sell me your truck. Because any truck that could drive 6 hours on $30 of fuel, I want that truck.
Yeah.
And the guy, she's like, okay, I'll just order it.
Yeah.
And I was like, man.
That's the truth. Yeah.
If only he could get away with that. But like, it's so true. People just complain and, you know, whatever. Yeah. They don't understand. Even something as simple as time and gas. You know, fuel. And people discredit their time all the time.
Yeah, it's funny because guys I work with, they'll want something made. They'll be like, "Ah, oh, it's a little bit expensive." It's like, I know what you make an hour. Like, so you're begrudging me? Like, you sit on your ass all day and do nothing, but you know, I'm actually gonna have to work and make you something, and you don't want to pay me?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Come on,
come on.
It's just weird. It's hard. You know, it's a fine line, and that's why it's like, you know, I don't know. It's very difficult because it just, the price goes up so fast, and I don't think people realize that. And it sucks because I wish I could just make stuff for people all day, like, and just, you know, batch it out. And that's what always kind of bummed me out about the laser. It's like the CNC, it's like you can make really like nice, beautiful stuff. The laser you can too, but I always felt like the laser, like me and Jimmy call it dumpster food. You know, it's like you're just making shit. You know, it's like you have to make a lot of things, like a lot of one thing, like, you know, for a wedding, like place sitting numbers, you know, to make money. And it's like, you know, and it's funny, I got my laser. I didn't even know how to use it. And I was like, if anybody needs anything. And this guy reached out to me. He's like, I need these names cut for a wedding. And I didn't know how to use my laser yet. It wasn't even working. And I was like, I can do it. And it was a Thursday afternoon. He goes, I need them by Tuesday. And I was like, all right. It was only like, I forget how many it was, but I was charging him $350, right? It was say like 10 of them or something. Or like, it was a small number, like 15. It wasn't a lot. And he's like, $350? I was like, yeah. Like, I had no idea how to price it. But I thought like originally that was like fear. And he's like, well, I go, dude, you need him as a rush. It's $350. I said, you need him by Monday. He goes, I don't need him till Tuesday. I said, yeah, but if you need him Tuesday morning, they got to be done Monday. Like, I'm not going to finish him 5 a.m.
yeah.
Tuesday.
What do people
so
think?
So it's like, okay. So this woman I know had a glow forge. And I said, hey, can you make these? And she's like, yeah. I go, I need the 15 of them. I need them today. She's like, I can't have them done today. I can't have them done tomorrow. So now it's Thursday. She'll have them done Friday. So she does them Friday. She brings them over. I go, how much do I owe you? She goes, $60. I go, what? She goes, I think I'm going to make $50 off this thing. She's like, is that too much? Give me 50. I go, no, here's 200. She's like, 200. She goes, are you crazy? These are only like $3 each. I'm like, what? She goes, yeah. She goes, go look on Etsy. So I go on Etsy. I'm like, holy shit. I was like, I charged the guy $350. She's like, and he paid you? I go, yeah. So she's like, I was like, oh man, I'm gonna retire off this, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, I felt bad after because I didn't know what to charge the guy, you know, yeah. But he needed him, he got him. He was a wedding planner, you know, it got done. But you know, I gave her a lot of money, you know, and it like I learned then that it was like, you know, like that's why these people that have lasers, you see them like they, you know, spitting out coasters. They're doing this. They're doing 100 of this. And like if I knew I could make a living doing that, maybe I would do that, like just so I could retire. But it's just not like that's not rewarding to me. Like it just
production
I don't
work.
Know. It's just yeah. Yeah. For, it's like working in a factory and. Yeah, and like these guys get all jacked over it and stuff. And it's like you said, you're like a factory worker. Like, is that what you really want to do? Like, you're not really being creative. And maybe if that's the thing, like, that's fine too, I guess. But that's just not for me, you know? But yeah, it just, it's funny though. Like, I always felt that like the CNC can make really nice, beautiful stuff. And the laser, it's like you got to make a lot of stuff to make money, you know? And, I'm not really good at that, you know. Like I just reached out to I'm in a group like a chat room or whatever, like 15 laser guys, and this woman I know, she wants like the recipe, like her grandmother's recipe put on a cutting board. That's like a big thing.
Oh, that's
this
cool.
is what people
cool.
don't realize. It's very nice.
Yeah.
So she sends it to me. I've spent probably an hour talking to this lady. So yeah. There's 1 hour.
Yeah.
Now, the recipe, it's from our grandmother. It's ancient. It's all yellowed. It's all tatted. You can't just import it and copy it. She wants her handwriting. I don't know how to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, if it works with light burn, copying it, that's fine. But if it doesn't, I don't know how to do that. So now I got to pay somebody to make that file. She wants six or seven cutting boards. I have cutting board blanks I bought. I paid like from this woodworker up in New Hampshire. I buy them for like $50 each. So I'm going to tell her like they're like $125. Like, you know, and I'll make $75 a cutting board, but I still got to get the file figured out, you know, see if she wants to do it. Like to me, it's not worth the aggravation, honestly, to make, you know, $250 or whatever. I don't know the math, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it just seems like an awful lot of work. Like maybe if I knew how to do that, convert the file and, you know, but like I told her, I says, I'm not making the cutting boards. Like, I don't know how people make cutting boards and engrave them and stuff and make money off that. That's just like, especially like an end grain cutting board. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Did you ever make one?
Oh yeah.
It's a lot of work.
It is.
It's a lot of
sanding
wood too.
And a lot of wood.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
It's a lot. People don't realize how much work it is making an end grain cutting board. And then people want like the designs and stuff.
Yeah. I saw it on Instagram.
A
you herringbone can do it, right?
End grain, like they're getting all these different shapes or using all their scraps, and that process takes 5 times longer than doing a standard conventional.
And to get it
right?
exact and perfect, and if it's not perfect, it doesn't look right.
I want a live good edge cutting board with epoxy on the corners.
Yeah,
seal it all good.
Yeah.
Can you get it to me by Tuesday? My budget's $50. Is that okay?
Yeah.
You can do that, right?
I made some cutting boards. I took a piece of olive wood, put it in my chop saw, cut it up, and like rounded over the edges, and said, "See you later."
Yeah,
you know, it's like that's the extent.
Yeah.
It's too much for me. It's just I don't know, but I suppose if you set up for it and you're doing it, maybe I don't know.
So speaking of pricing, Derek, you dabble in so many different, you know, your epoxy, your late.
Have you struggled? Because one thing when I was doing some kind of furniture on the side, the whole pricing side of things, I was always, and even the shop that I worked at, I was never involved with the pricing of kitchen cabinets and all that. And I struggled. I think I undersold a bunch of stuff. But do you, have you kind of, are you still learning that with all these new, like, with epoxy, for instance? I mean, that's, how do you do that?
Like I said, so my day job, like I said, I do pretty well. And I'm like, I will be damned if I'm going to work in my own shop for less money. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's like, you know, if it's sponsored by a company, I'll take the hit because I'm like, I'm getting paid by them. So it doesn't hurt as bad. But even that, like, it's like, why do you benefit because somebody else is paying me? Like, it's kind of really not fair, you know, because I think it lowers it for everybody. But it's very difficult. I don't know if you saw the boxes I made for Carhartt, but they paid a lot of money for those boxes. I'll tell you off. Yeah, I will not tell you on. Yeah, they paid a lot of money. I documented every minute I worked on those things, and I probably made $10 more an hour than I make in my day job. And I thought this was going to be a payday, big payday for me, and it wasn't. And I was like, wow, like that was a big reality check. And it just, it shows you, like, I just feel like, honestly, it's never enough money, you know, because even if you score good on this one, you probably got beat on three other ones. Yeah. So it's evening out, but it's hard. It's hard. You know, there's a ton of videos out there, you know, people like, you know, you got to charge this by hour and this and that. And that's not the way to do it either, you know,
because your overhead's like, different than a full production shop's overhead.
Like my so I'm just like in a basement shop in my house. My electric bill for just my house was usually $110 a month. My electric bill last month was $610. You know, so it's like
and all the tools, like, and the, you know, the time it takes.
It's like, that's, somebody's got to pay that. Like, why should I pay it? Like, it's your stuff. You know, it's like, but you know what I mean? And that's the type of stuff you don't think of, you know, it's like, you know, I really don't want to swear, but we used to call it when I worked, we called it the fuck up factor, you know, like you gotta make more money to cover it. You know, like, because like you said, inevitably things get screwed up, you know, and it stinks because it's just not, you know, I learned a very valuable lesson when I was doing construction. I did a deck for a buddy of mine, his aunt, his great aunt. She was an elderly woman, very, very nice woman. She had a pressure treated deck, like three levels on a hillside, and she wanted a Trex deck when Trex first came out. This was, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, whatever it was. So I built it. It was beautiful. It was all gray wood, no railings or nothing. So it was like on the ground. It was like just a couple levels. She lived on a hill. And she called me the next year and she said, I'd love it if you could come and pressure wash it. And I was like, well, it shouldn't need to pressure wash it. She's like, well, it's all dirty. I'm like, all right, I'll come by and take a look at it. I go over and it has got black spots all over two of the sections of it. So I'm like, what the hell is that? So I'm looking at it and I bring it to a buddy of mine, take a piece out. He goes, it's black mold. I'm like, mold? I was like, shit. So I go to the lumberyard and they send a rep out and he goes, yeah, this isn't warranted. I go, what do you mean? He goes, says right in the directions, it can't be closer than 18 inches to the ground. He goes, you got like 9 inches off the ground over here. And I was like, yeah. So like, what's that mean? He's like, we're not responsible. He's like, you're responsible. So she's like, I want it all replaced. And I'm like, I said, it was like a lifetime warranty, but like, I didn't mean it. Like, you know, that was only if everything went right.
That's what people say. I don't know. It's just
It was like my selling point, you know? So, she's like, the only thing, she goes, I want pressure treated wood. I hate this. I don't want it. I want wood. So I take all the decking up. I buy all the wood and I spent 2 weeks replacing it all on my dime. And she, when I was done, she said, you know what? She goes, you have to be the most honest person I ever dealt with. She paid for the material and gave me $1,000.
Wow.
And
wow.
Yeah. And, you know, she was pretty well off, this woman, and but she didn't have to. And, you know, I had little kids, my kids were babies, and I cried. I learned a lesson that, like, you don't, you know, write a check with you ask cash, you know. And it was like a big lesson that you got to be careful, like, what you promise people, because, like, you may have to follow through with that, you know. But it was a tough pill to swallow, you know. And that's what's, like, kind of hard sometimes too, you know. It's you know, I'll be straight with you. One of the jobs I just did, I made the sign I made where I welded up the bracket. It went up to a florist in Maine, and she got it. And, you know, we talked on the phone, and she's like, yeah, I want it black and white, and I want the frame. I'm not sure. I says, well, how about we do, like, this white, like, kind of rustic-y looking thing? It'll be like reclaimed wood. It'll look really cool. So I had a bunch of white oak, and I fumed it. And I thought I was going to fume the white oak, make it like dark blackish. And I was going to kind of paint it white and kind of distress it a little bit. And so I kind of did that. And she's like, I love the sign, I hate the frame. And she's like, how can we fix it? She's a wedding planner, and I've done work for her in the past, and I want to continue to work for her. I said, send it back, I'll replace it, you know. And she's like, really? I go, absolutely. So she sent it back. And I was pissed, to be honest with you, because I told her exactly. I didn't send her a picture of what I was going to do, but I described exactly what I was going to do. And to me, it looked exactly like I described it. It was white with, you know, distressed looking, blah, blah, blah. But she didn't like it. And the kick in the ass was, she's like, can we just make it like a charcoal-y gray? And that's how it all started when I fumed it. And, you know, so that's basically what I'm going to do. But, you know, the moral of the story is she didn't like it, you mm-hmm. know, so it was part my fault. I should have taken a picture of it or got it in writing. And, you know, but I didn't. But, you know, at the end of the day, it wasn't an expensive sign to make. It was made with scrap acrylic. So I just, you know, that part's fine. And the wood I used is scrap wood. So it's, you know, the cost of it wasn't a lot, but it was just something I really don't want to remake, you know. Mm-hmm. I already get paid for it. The money's already gone.
Yeah.
And so as you said, you make really good on one project and you get three or four, right? But then also having the responsibility of making sure that customer's happy with their project, that might mean you take something back two or three times, and that's the one that might bite you in the butt three times too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you find
that happened?
Sorry, go
ahead.
What's
that?
I was going to say, do you find that I could just as you're talking, it could just relate to a couple things when I've agreed to do a couple things for buddies or whatever. You're excited at the beginning, and then all of a sudden you're getting into this, and then you're kind of on the hook.
There's an oh shit moment, right? Maybe.
Well, but it's not necessarily for, it's not a passion project anymore. It's like, you got to do this and it probably would be worse if it was your bread and butter. But at the same time, do you find that taking these jobs kind of takes away from the passion of it a little bit? Or some of them, the big corporate ones, or I don't know.
Yeah, no, well, I've been lucky that a lot of the ones that I still do, I kind of enjoy what I'm doing, you know, like the type of projects. So that's not bad. But yeah, like, it does kind of take a lot out of it. Like, a lot of times I just want to make something for the sake of making it, and I have a hard time doing that. Like, there's a couple things I want to do right now, and I just have to wait, you know, and it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
You know, one of them's a Christmas present for my wife that she's not going to get again this year, you know, but she doesn't care, you know. But I would like to do what I want to do sometimes, and that's not always possible.
Yeah. Mm.
When you're taking so many different projects on, right? And your day-to-day job and your personal life, and everybody gets so run down, and you're still out there grinding.
Christmas
and
comes up quick. You know, it's like every year I say, it's like Christmas stuff you have to start doing in September.
Yeah.
You know,
but
you're
not
really
in the mindset to do it in September. So yeah, you never do,
but
right?
It comes up so
quick.
You're just
finishing your Thanksgiving stuff.
September, that's what happens. Yeah. It's kind of a bummer, but you really have to, you know.
So before we get into wrapping up, I just have one more question about.
Sure.
So we're partnered with Grind Coffee Co. And we like to ask our guests about, like, a grind time story that they had when you persevered through some adversity, like a really tough situation in your life or in your career. or, you know, in going from, you know, developing your Derek from Malden, whether it's the brand or learning the skills or whatever it was, what was one moment or one thing that happened in your career that it was a lot of adversity and you just kind of grinded through it?
Yeah.
And what was that like? Like something that really sucked to get through and that you persevered. What was one of those things?
The one I'm doing right now, that's one of them. But no, that white oak table, that thing was tough to do. It was a huge white oak table I built, and it was too big to build in my shop. So I built it in my buddy's shop. It was about an hour away from here. So it was like, you know, going there, you know, every couple of days to work on it. And then I had to have it out of his shop and realized there wasn't any finish on it. So I had to rent shop space for a month, move it there, work on it there. And then I had to deliver it 2 hours from my house. And, you know, one thing I try never to do is get paid for a job before. You know, most of the work I do is for people I know, or somehow there's a connection or something. And I'm never usually worried about getting paid. If I don't get paid, it's not going to be a lot in materials, maybe some time, but not materials. I don't buy materials for thousands of dollars and be on the hook for that. But if there's no money in it for me, I'll lose interest in it, you know? So those ones are tough to grind through. So you always got to leave a payday, you know, there to, you know, make it so you can grind through it, yeah. You know,
the horizon grind time.
Yeah.
Hey?
Yeah.
Oh man. So if there wasn't a payday, waiting for you at the end of that crappy situation, what would get you through that? Like,
just knowing you have to, know, it's your name, you know, that's one thing my father always like instilled in me. And I instill in my own kids, like, you know, if you don't have your word, you know, you're screwed. And I would just, you know, believe me, I've lost a lot of money on a lot of things I've made. And, I'd rather do that than disappoint somebody or screw somebody
or compromise your integrity, right?
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think that's an awesome trait to have.
I have a huge sign behind me that's been up against this wall for probably 3 years. I was building for Fireball Tools. I don't know if you follow that guy, Jason, and he makes does a lot of steel fabrication stuff, and he hired me to make a sign for him, and I made 3 of them, and I just told him I can't do it. It just doesn't look right. It's not coming out right. It was a huge epoxy sign. And just, I think it was just too big what he wanted. And, you know, luckily for me, I got the epoxy from Totemo for free, but it was weeks and weeks of work and it just was never happened, you know, and it was a tough one. It was a bit of pill to swallow, but I couldn't with a clear conscience be like, hey, yeah, I'm going to send it to you. You know, because I would have been embarrassed, you know, and I just rather not, you know, rather lose money than be embarrassed or, you know, like you said, it's about integrity, you know.
Where do you think that came from in your life? Like, where did that sense of integrity or that need to be honest and
having a intimidating father, was a Sicilian that basically
Sicilian.
No, my father was just real big into having integrity. Like that was like my father's big thing in life. Cool. And I was kind of just really into that with my kids. And I just something I really believe in. You know, I just remember my father just being like, you know, if you're gonna be one, I'd rather you be a thief than a liar because I can keep my eye on a thief, you know. Mm. And he just was very big into keeping your word, and you know, it just was always like that, you know. Yeah. So it kind of just,
that's a good value to pass down to your kids too, that you picked up too, right? Because I think we need to keep that going. I think as parents in general, and even for my kids, that integrity and being, you know, if you say something, your word, you know, you gotta, I don't know, it seems like there's a lot of flakiness and people saying things and going back, and that's just, I feel like you got to go back to the old school ways of
you
know, handshake and the verbal contract, right?
Meant something.
No, exactly.
So as we wrap up here, Derek, what advice do you have for somebody that would be looking to get into the, I guess, maker community or to start something, you know?
Honestly, it sounds so cliche, but like one thing I wish I did was just like follow your dream, you know? It's something I always wanted to do, but you know, my father was adamant that, you know, you got to get a job, you know, and, you know, like I think a lot of people think art type jobs aren't real jobs, you know, and they might be tougher to make money, but it's, you know, I wish I followed my dream instead of my father's dream, you know, not that it was a great dream, but it was like, get a job with a big company and a pension and this, and you'll be happy, you know? And it just was always unfulfilled, you know? And I have a good job and I like my job, but I always wish I was doing my own thing, you know? And I think people get afraid, and I still am always afraid to like take that leap to just leave my job. And, you know, and once you get to that point, you can't just leave, you know, you have to kind of do what's right for you and your family. You know, it's not just about you. That's why I laugh a lot of people when they're like, oh, but this is what I want to do with my life. Well, you know what? Sometimes we all just don't get to do what we want to do for our career, you know?
Yeah.
The guy cleaning the bathroom didn't decide that's what he wanted to do with his life, you know?
And you also have three other people who have lives as well.
Yeah, exactly. You
know?
Yeah.
So say there's somebody that's following their dreams. They want to, you know, become a maker, build things. What are some technical skill sets that they should develop?
To get into this? Well, definitely you got to have a basic understanding of woodworking. And, but I tell you, I think metal fabrication is like really where it's at. I think, you know, if you, it just seems like, not that woodworking is easy, but I just think if you can learn metal fabrication and mix it with woodworking and that type stuff, you're just so much better off. Like, that's one thing I wish I learned, like metal fab work, like a long time ago, just because I don't know if it was just more mysterious. Like, you know, my friend Chris always says, like, if you have no knowledge of woodworking, you could break a piece of furniture and go to Home Depot and buy some type of glue and glue it together. But if you break something that's made out of steel, you need to find somebody to fix it for you.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true, yeah.
And even all the nuances, like if you hit a piece of metal, it stretches a certain way, hammer and dolly work, the metallurgy, the different alloys, like what preheating and post-heat, like it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just learning too. Like there's so much to learn. It's nuts.
Yeah.
So last question. If someone wants to get into this, whether, you know, hobby or jump in full time, top three starting out tools that every maker needs to have.
Definitely a table saw. I think like that's the foundation of every shop. Not so much now with a track saw, but track saws can be expensive. It's amazing what you can do with a track saw. But I think it's just a table saw. I just think it's like that anchor to your shop. It's kind of like what everything revolves around. So get a nice table saw, saw stop if you can afford it. I have one and I love it. It's a great saw. Another tool. I never really used to use mine, but I love my bandsaw. You know, they're a lot of fun. And I think once you learn how to use one properly, they're a lot more useful than people think, you know. I was going to say a router, but I mean, you need a drill and all that shit, but probably a good router too, you know. You can do a lot with the router, you know, for cutting circles and trimming things, panels and stuff like that. So that's what I have to say.
Well, Derek, this has been an awesome episode. I mean, we got to have you on again. There's a lot, a ton more that we have listed that we wanted to ask you, but we'll have to have you on a second time. But I just want to say thank you for taking the time out of your really busy schedule to come on the show. And
thank you for having me.
As we kind of wrap up here, you want to share, where can people find you and what do you have going on?
I keep it simple. Everything's Derek from Malden. You know, you can find me on Instagram, YouTube. My email is derekfromalden@gmail.com. But I'm supposed to be going in January to Tennessee to chair making class with Jimmy DiResta. We're going to be going down there. I'll be doing a class at WorkbenchCon on CNC work and epoxy work. It's not going to be like a CNC class, but just doing epoxy signs on the CNC, that type stuff. And yeah, that's about it. You know, that's all I really got going on.
And we'll share all those links down in the show notes of this episode too.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming on again. Like, this is awesome.
I can
listen to your stories all day. It's probably a million.
I can tell them all day.
It's soothing.
thanks to everyone for listening. We really appreciate it. Thanks, Hoff.
Thanks, Rosie.
And we'll catch everyone in the next one.
Thank you.